Hi there, this is WCOM LP. We're at Chapel Hill Carborough. This is 103.5 on your FM dial. You can also reach us as web streaming through communityradio.coop. That's .coop, communityradio.coop. And then just hit the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us live anytime, 24 hours a day. My name is Paul Nagy, and this is another edition of Touchstones, where we explore the spiritual and the religious in the lives of people who live in the Chapel Hill Carborough area. And as you may have noticed, if you've listened to this show before, we cast a wide net and get many people with many diverse points of view. Today, I am honored and delighted to have with us and to talk to us today is Donna Gulick. Donna Gulick, I heard about when I first moved here 12 years ago as a, I guess the way you were explained to me then was someone who did channeled readings for people where you gave them spiritual advice. Well, that's kind of the way my partner talked about you at that time. And since she was getting advice from you why she should break up with me, I can't necessarily say that I was overwhelmed with
gratitude.
Actually she played your tape for me and I thought it was quite good. I thought it was a very good way of that. You know, she needed assurance that she needed to follow her own lights. And, you know, since I was told her the same thing all the time myself, anyone else telling her that, even in the context of her thinking that that needed to be done in separation rather than, saw as fine myself. So I was appreciative of it in a kind of way. But what we're going to talk about today, I'll let Donna introduce herself and tell you what she does in a way which is not biased through my jaundice eye. But then we're probably going to talk about spiritual direction, and we'll try to get real concrete. We'll try to keep it real close to stuff that anybody can relate to. We'll try to keep it
and use,
yeah, practical, concrete, everyday
spirituality,
right? How to find God in every moment and every second, as Saint Paul said, and this is not me, how to pray unceasingly. Maybe we will struggle with that koan.
All right, I'm Donna Spring Gulick, and for about 26 years, I have done spiritual mentorship with people. I start with prayer in each session, and the person brings their questions, their issues, what's going on with them. I actually choose not to make it straight advice, but to empower them to make their own decisions. Now, they may go back and quote it as straight advice. I can't be responsible for that. I've also done healing work over these 26 years, a combination of types, but once you open and let healing come through, I believe that it's no longer a type per se. It's spirit, God, moving through us to help the other person heal themselves. I've also been working, it seems to be about one person at a time that comes to me that's in the dying process, helping them, mentoring them in that process. And I do a lot of teaching. I teach at conferences, give talks. But in addition, I, in my living room, always have an ongoing group that is for spiritual growth and spiritual community. It's very eclectic. I'm Christian-based, and I include things from Buddhism, things from many disciplines, things from the practicality of spirituality as I've experienced it, and I'm always learning. So I delight in doing the teaching because that's how I'm doing the learning.
Yeah, I used to, I remember when people would say, well, can you have a class in astrology, Paul? And he says, well, I said, I don't know anything about astrology, but I says, why don't you teach a class?
Right, yeah, exactly.
You know? And well, I don't know anything about it. He says, well, if you teach a class, you'll most
We always learn as we teach, and we always learn because we teach.
Yeah,
and I believe everyone's a teacher. I also believe everyone's an intuitive and receives in spirit.
Yeah. So let's talk about what spirit is, you know, in terms of my experience or the experience I'm have. I'm this ordinary folk, you know. I wake up, you know, I'm listening to the radio, right? I'm listening to the radio, and somebody's talking about spirit. Well, before I turn the dial and discussed, how can I make that real for me now? So these words aren't just, you know, echoes of some.
Excellent question. Excellent question. To me, that word is so huge that it is not fully definable. And that ancient Judaism had a really good point that it might be the unnameable. Because spirit is that essence that we are part of, that's part of us, that is love, it's power, it's wisdom, it's the inner voice, the divine voice, the Holy Spirit speaking within us. It, and if any word I use turns you off, I don't care if you call it peanut butter. Apply it to what works for you, and you'll be on a spiritual path because you are anyway.
Well, yeah, I would start, you know, quibbling here, though, what I'll say. If somebody was going to say that peanut butter was it, you know, not only are there a lot of people allergic to peanut butter, but... I would say it's the taste of peanut butter.
Well, what I really mean there is call it what you need to within your framework. Each of you that's listening or will listen later by downloading this, because it's not about getting stuck on the vocabulary. It's about going for the feel of it and the practical application of it. That's why I wanted to talk. Paul said, talk about anything you want today. And I said, sustainable spirituality. How do we live in a really discouraging world and sustain whatever our spirituality is and keep expanding and growing that?
Yeah. And, you know, at one level, it's the classic Jewish admonition to say yes to life.
Yes, it is. L'chaim. Yes.
Yes, l'chaim. To say yes to life.
Yes, it
and,
is.
And like even in the situation of hospice, I've done a little hospice volunteering myself, and you know, dying is saying yes to life, which
absolutely
one of the great processes that we all face. Many of us perhaps with fear, but the I think people die the way they live, so there's nothing. They don't necessarily import any great spirituality into the end time, although some people may.
There's a whole study of what pilots say as the plane is going down, and they either say, "Oh God," or "Oh, you know what?"
Yeah.
Because whatever their habit is what comes out. And part of sustainable spirituality is recreating our habits, any that aren't working for us. If I have habits, and I've gotten into some, where I'm looking at the world the way it's being politically set up, or global warming, or I look at any part of what's discouraging about the world, my habit becomes a sort of Eeyore, doom and gloom, in any way, then I don't want to be a Pollyanna and pretend it's all great. I want to work for what isn't. But on the other hand, I want to be able to change the framework to this is a birth in process. How can I help the birth in process? Birth in process is not attractive and has a lot of problems with it.
It's messy.
It's really messy, no matter whether it's human or a chick coming out of an egg. It's really messy. And if I can reframe through meditation, through thankfulness, through prayer, through nature, through any number of ways, and we can talk about some of the ways, I'd love to, because that gets it nitty-gritty practical.
Yeah, well, yeah, as I said, because one of the things we do want to emphasize here for people who... I always like to address the happy atheist, as I call them, the person who was raised without religion and really is puzzled by people who are concerned with such weird words as spirituality and, you know, and these broad metaphysical, you know, will-o'-the-wisps. You know, and you know, they just know that, you know, they've got this life. They don't know where they came from, and, you know, it was probably an accident, and they're probably going to die in the same way. You know, it'll be an accident. And they don't, you know, they don't really know who they are, and they know that maybe they could find out, but they don't necessarily see that as a religious enterprise.
And I would have to separate the word religion and the word spirituality for the way I operate. Religion is institution or something that's been institutionalized. And that isn't a judgment either way. It simply is. And spirituality to me is something that very atheist you mentioned may go outside and just love looking at the treetops where they meet the sky.
Yeah.
No problem.
And the recognition of beauty, you know, recognition of beauty is in the classic sense of the word, is realizing that you can love.
And it's a high spiritual path.
Yeah.
As is thankfulness.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, yeah. And again, thankfulness in its deepest sense of the word, of deep abiding gratitude, which can be just an attitude that you have towards life, towards, I don't know who I am or where I am or any of that. I don't really, can't answer the big questions, sort of like the Buddha. I'm going to sidestep them. But I'm here. And I'm happy, and I'm going to keep it happy if I can.
Exactly.
So, well, that's so how do we keep it happy? So some of the practices, practical practices,
exactly,
that don't ignore global warming and the war.
Right. Know. They do not ignore the pain in life, and they don't pretend that if you smash your finger with a hammer, it doesn't hurt because pain hurts. Figure.
Yeah.
And if we're in a body, there's going to be things that are unpleasant or that hurt or disease or whatever because we came in a physical body.
Yep.
I know that one of the highest vibrations, the highest energies we can experience is thankfulness. So when we feel less than happy, which we all do some of the time, than to look for even one thing we can feel thankful for. It does not have to be thank you, God, or thank you, Spirit. Thankfulness is thankfulness. It's all one anyway. And so it's simply, wow, thank you that I had something to eat today. Or thank you that there's a tree here and it's not all barren. Or whatever you can start with that you're thankful for begins a change of mind from despair to gratefulness that leads to, gosh, there's something that's good, that's happening, that's beautiful in my life. Acceptance of what is another one that I feel is very, very important and that we all still are working on unless we've really somehow gotten all the way there and accept everything that is. I have not. I work at it.
I guess acceptance of what is and the gratitude sort of remind me is one can be loud, though I'll tell you a feeling that I've known, and I'm sure I'm not alone, is when I've been most in love, I've also been sort of almost and sometimes very shy about it. It was sort of like, I hate to tell you this, but I love you. I don't run away.
This is not
meant as a contract that you have to, echo me back that you love me. But you know what I mean? It's sort of like, this doesn't mean that, I'm going to, attach myself as your shadow for the rest of your life.
Well, a lot of people have that misconception that love means some kind of
it's a contract.
Necessary codependency. Yeah. I'm blessed enough to have been married, it'll be 35 years this fall, to a man I'm still madly in love with and absolutely adore. So I have to agree that love does put me in a spirit of thankfulness. On the other hand, if we didn't practice thankfulness in our home with each other, would we still be this much in love after 35 years, 36 together? I don't know that we would be. One of the blessings of our relationships is saying thank you to each other a lot for pretty much anything and who the other person is. And, you know, thank you, Dave, that you're listening on the radio right now, if you can get it while you're on your personal spiritual retreat at Jordan Lake.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, yeah. Good luck there. I'll be surprised if you get it down in Jordan Lake, too. But the...
That brings me to another thing, Paul, if I might bring it up,
sure.
Which is to sustain spirituality, I think we need to, every now and then, get some alone time. Now, if you're a person who lives alone, you may get it naturally. If you're a person who lives with even one other person... I fully believe we need to go off by ourselves sometimes. My husband and I do, often just to Jordan Lake. It doesn't have to be big. You can, you know, and if it's lousy camping weather or you don't like to camp, house sit for somebody for a couple days. That's going to be away for the weekend. There's always a way, but find a way to get some alone time. First part of it, feelings and thoughts will come up. Next part gives you a chance to get clearer and release those. Last part gives you a chance to decide if there's an action you want to take to do something with them. I don't mean you organize it necessarily. It just kind of happens that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, let's talk about this alone time. This alone time. There are some people who are afraid of alone time because they think of it as a loneliness.
Lonely time, right.
Yes, lonely time.
I've walked in those shoes before, sure.
And, of course, there are other people who find alone time, you know, exhilarating and really wonder why, you know. I mean, I get along so well with myself, I really wonder why I ever need to talk to anybody else, you know.
And there are others of us.
But I guess I wouldn't be surprised. So.
There are others of us that are so much with other people that if we don't structure it to take that time, we don't go inward enough. So obviously, everyone has to find your own perfect balance. If you're an introvert, there's a wonderful book called Introvert Advantage, which helps you feel extremely good about being one. If you're an extrovert, as I happen to be, which is why I talk for a living, I suppose, one of the things that we extroverts need to do is be sure that there are even moment-to-moment pauses where you just pause for a moment, release whatever you're carrying around in your emotions, in your thoughts. Just my favorite way is imagine you can just breathe it all in through your navel and just let it fall by gravity through your feet into the ground as compost, and that whatever's left is light. You just take that moment of pause, that moment of being in the oneness, that mystical moment, and then you're refreshed. You're more filled, you're more centered again, ready to do whatever you're going to do next.
Well, this is actually one of the great mysteries of the spirituality that we're talking about is the practicing non-reactivity, which is...
Yes.
And one of the great exercises for that, if you suddenly find yourself up against the wall with some, you know, great crisis... Well, you're likely to be reactive to it. I mean, anybody would be in a major conflict or something.
Or if you, you know, spill the juice and you're in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the question is, yeah, you know, but then the question is that by practicing what you just mentioned, this momentary letting go with the small things, just letting go and, follow your breath through a cycle, and then you'll see that what happens is that it's sort of like I don't have to, react to a grimace with a grimace, or I don't have to be angry because somebody's sharp with me, or somebody's angry at me, or appears to be angry. Go on.
And when we do, when we notice, oh, I got angry about that, I got reactive about that, I mean... You know, I'm an emotional person. I can get reactive in terms of, especially if I do something that I'm not thrilled I just did, like, oh, let's just take spill the juice at the moment. We still can clear that. We can still let it go. There's another way I love to do it, and that's just imagine that I'm holding in the palm of my hand my emotional reaction of, oh, this is terrible, or whatever it is, and I am simply releasing it into pure white light where it is, whatever's dark is becoming lit up and is transformed from darkness to light. And that's another one I happen to love, because I can put people I'm worried about there, or I can put my latest reaction to, I don't know, stepping on the dog's foot or whatever it might happen to be.
Well, actually, and this is one of the, you know, we're talking about, in some ways, we're talking about the practicality, the spade work of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you began out saying that what everything is, that one of the most powerful spiritual practices is this, a sense of overwhelming thankfulness, gratitude, recognition that just being alive is an incredible grace, that it's an incredible,
yes,
wondrous possibility. You know, just being aware of this moment and being able to perceive the things that I do and to be alive is just an incredibly, powerfully, overwhelmingly mysterious and wonderful and inscrutable and loving, and that underneath all of this there's this deep acceptance, and the deep acceptance is you just want to say yes to it.
I agree.
No into the yes. Yes, yes,
I agree completely. I think that it's keeping the mystery in life and noticing the moment-to-moment miracles of life are a big part of staying alive and vital and youthful, no matter what age we are, no matter, you know, I'm 62 and I'm loving being, quote, older than I used to be.
And she doesn't look a day over 42, friends. I can tell you that right now.
Thank you. But it may be gratefulness if that's the case, along with maybe some genetics that helped.
Yeah.
And what I love about being older is that more and more and more I can see that life is an experience of many miracles, many little bitty ones over and over and over again. Even the ones I thought were pretty awful once upon a time have turned out to be absolutely one of the biggest boosts on the path, or one of the biggest learning places that really freed me to be much less stifled by my own attitudes.
Yeah, you know, one of the chronic conditions that's deeply prevalent throughout our society, and all of us at some point in our lives suffer from it at some level, and many of us, surprisingly, majority of us, even to the point of needing some kind of professional intercession, is the problem of depression. You know, and depression is, it's hard to say what depression is. It's actually a mystery in itself, but it is some way of being so cut off from your feelings. And the feeling of gratitude, this talk about gratitude that we have now, if somebody is chronically depressed, is going to be at best a sort of a buzzing irritant that doesn't make any sense, because there doesn't seem to be any energy to make this change. No matter what we do, there seems to be this gloom or darkness or this heaviness. And this, depression, what I'm trying to explain here is that this depression that many people feel, that go through, a part of their life is part of it, or some people suffer from it chronically in a variety of ways, is very, very common. And it's one of the ways that struggling with the spirituality, some people learn to slowly cycle out of this depression.
I work with about 12 to 15 people a week. I do spiritual mentoring,
mm-hmm,
with people where they come about once a month, and then I give them tools to take home and use. And probably a quarter of those people come because they're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
They have done usually a lot of therapy. They may still be seeing a psychotherapist, psychologist, or psychiatrist, mm-hmm. may or may not be on meds, all of which is fine. If you're taking a med, you thank it as you swallow it that it's doing some good for you and that you release from it anything that isn't. And one of the things that's a well-known fact about depression is taking any action whatsoever, internal or external, is any non-self-harmful action, is a help, even if it's a teeny-weeny help. So one of the things is choosing something you're going to do that's different than what you're doing. I recommend the tools by Byron Katie. Some people like them, some people don't, so it doesn't mean everyone will love it. Her first book, Loving What Is, I found every one of her books useful, but her first book, Loving What Is, presents four questions that you can ask to help look at something differently. If a person's really depressed, they may not even want to try, but if they're willing to try for, let's say, 3 days, or better still, for 21, it takes 21 days to make a habit, mm-hmm. they may find, he or she may find, that it's possible to begin looking at things a little differently. Now, if you have chronic depression because your brain is not producing certain chemicals, that's a different matter. It needs something that helps your brain produce the chemicals, i.e. medicinal, herbal, whatever works for you, whatever your doctors and practitioners help you to work out in a system of medical help. But in addition, those thought patterns have become habitual. And so one of the authors that I've found is very helpful with changing them is Byron Katie. Byron as in Lord Byron, and Katie, K-A-T-I-E. She goes by Katie, but Katie's her last mm-hmm. name.
Yeah, and she also married the famous poet and translator. What was his name?
Stephen Mitchell.
Stephen Mitchell.
He did one of the translations of the Tao Te Ching from a very mystical standpoint where he went in and just felt what each one meant, translated it that way. I find it very beautiful.
Yeah, I recommend his works too. Mm-hmm. But Byron Katie's been popular on the circuit. Another one who practices and has made popular in all places through Oprah is this wonderful
Eckhart
guy.
Tolle.
Yes.
Tolle is another one of my favorites, yes.
Now, one of the funny things is his book, The Power of Now, one of the first places it was reviewed, at least when I saw the review, was in the newsletter of the Ramana Maharshi.
Really?
Yeah. And this was long before it became a bestseller.
Right.
It took a little more than a year for it to move up to the ranks. But what he does is he basically, through his own effort, he's a real authentic teacher. And there are a lot of teachers out there who I have reservations about. But Eckhart Tolle isn't one of them because he paid his dues.
Same thing with Byron Katie. Both of them have been to the bottom.
Yeah.
Therefore, what they offer is valuable.
Yeah. They've done their work. And of course, what he does is he focuses in on the thing that you most need to know about meditation. And it's also what you most need to know about any kind of spiritual practice, is that where it happens is not yesterday, and it won't be tomorrow. It happens to be right now, and the now is now. There is no another now, except the now that's now. And the now doesn't have to be a little now that's so fast you can't keep up with it. The now is the now that at the presence of where you are now, and you just stay with that now, and that now is okay.
And that whatever's in that now has something in it for you.
Yeah, and one of the ways that the gratitude that we say, that one of the ways you can understand gratitude is opening up to the now. Say, because a gratitude as a feeling or as a, I like to think of attitudes as sort of predispositions to feelings, you know.
Right.
Yeah, is...
That's well done.
Open this, yeah. Oh, you open to this. Wow, this is happening. Or is
what's the gift in this now?
Yeah.
That's good.
as what old hippie used to say, he had that on a piece of cardboard floating around in his room. Wow is the now. And then, of course, on the other thing, he had a card, which is, I'm somewhere in this room. But be that as it is, yeah.
I think one of the ways it's very easy for us to talk about being in the now. My husband and I were talking at breakfast about how hard it is to actually regularly, moment to moment, stay in the now. I mean, I'm famous for driving down the street and the other person with me goes, didn't you want to turn there? oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah, you were in the now, but you were in another now.
Some other now. Future now, probably. Past now. Making a list in my head now. Dealing with life now.
Yeah, but being distracted by gratitude now.
Now, that would be okay. That wouldn't be so difficult because you could be in the present moment and put those two together.
Yeah.
I think one of the ways to help come back to the now is simply we were given these marvelous senses we have. Mm-hmm. Whatever senses we have in working order, even if they're not perfect, what am I seeing right now? What am I hearing right now? What am I smelling? What thought just came in my head? And then you can let it go and go, that's a thought, rather than let it take us clear out of the now again. And I did find and do find Eckhart Tolle's books very, very helpful. And you can listen to him free on Oprah.com. They have made all of that available,
their
shows.
Yeah.
Right. Even as these are. I particularly enjoy for staying in the present moment. And this may not be needed by everybody, but I'm a high-speed person. And so I release by breathing it out whatever I need to let go of. So that might be breathe out tension, breathe in peace. It might be breathe out discomfort if there's some discomfort in my body. Breathe in oneness or comfort. That's also a way of doing sort of an open prayer where you breathe out what you don't need. And basically you're saying, okay, universe, which can be okay, God, okay, Holy Spirit, okay, universe, okay, however you want to put it, I am open to what I need right now. Your highest self is going to bring that in. Whether you have a belief system about it or you just do it, it's not what your head thinks about it that matters. It's being it, experiencing it.
Yeah, and again, for the happy atheist in the group, one of the ways that just somatically you can deal with not being reactive, you know, not being caught up in other people's agendas or other situations, you know, not becoming part of the throng, the mob, that's whatever it is. And so that is learning how to regulate your own breathing. One of the things I always used to get a kick is, you know, they used to say, a friend of mine used to say, you know, well, before you, you know, speak in haste, you know, take a deep breath. And then count to 10 slowly, you know, count to 10.
Grew up on that one.
Yeah, and then,
they didn't do it.
Of course, what happened, though, is the people would take the breath and they would hold the breath. And then count to 10 slowly with their ire growing at each with each number. But that was not the idea. The idea was to take a slow breath and then count slowly, you know, allowing yourself to breathe calmly and deeply. And if you regulate your breathing, which most of us can do, it will help.
And forget.
Yeah, it will regulate our feelings, our emotions in a situation. It's hard to do in times of conflict or deep arousal, but it can happen. It is a way to, you know, not get utterly caught up in what's going on, and then where you can regulate things. You can take somebody who's angry or disappointed, and you can give them a smile that will change their day rather than return with them more, you know, anger or whatever it is.
And no matter what your belief system is, you can let go on the out-breath of anything you don't want to keep and take in on the in-breath of anything you want to receive. So if you're angry, you can breathe out anger. And if you want to receive compassion, you breathe in compassion. or you breathe in unconditional love. Even if you're not feeling it right then, the very choice to release one and choose the other begins to change what's happening.
Following the breath is one of the great ones. One of the ones I'm very fond of, which is strongly emphasized in Kashmir Shaivism, is taking the four aspects of the breathing, which is the breathing out and then stopping, and then the breathing in and then stopping. And in the stops of the breath, which is the out-breath and the in-breath, the two stops where you're not breathing, you hold those for just a little while. And in that holding of them, you realize that everything is possible. Anything is possible, and then you allow things to things.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, the... I guess it's, I'm not sure if it's the Shiva Sutras or one of the other Kashmir Shaiva texts. They do say that that in the stop of the breath, holding the breath, there is the peace, you know, the path to this understanding, that the presence of the simple holding awareness that judges not, you know.
There's a natural pause between the in-breath and the out-breath, and the out-breath and the in-breath. By nature, there is a momentary pause there.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'll be teaching in July, in fact, on July 26th, there's a one-day meditation workshop with a number of eclectic ways to meditate. I haven't taught meditation in years, but I used to teach it in various churches and in the community. And then there were lots of other people teaching it. Recently, a number of people have asked, because of putting eclectic methods together, would I? So July 26th, there will be one. And one of my favorites that I would put in right at this moment is simply in your breath without even having to hold it. Just notice there's a slight pause, and in that pause, feel yourself expand into all that is, like light is all the way around you, and simply expand into it on the pause right at the top of the in-breath, just before the out-breath, and on the pause right at the bottom of the out-breath, just before the in-breath. Let that expand into all that is, and it brings you into a great peace. By the way, if I could give my website for anybody that doesn't get to listen to the whole hour.
And you will, the website will be posted next to this MP3 file if you download this. Yeah.
It's www.donnaspring, like the season, Gulick, GULICK.com.
So for people locally around here, you're going to be doing a one-day meditation retreat July
26th, which is a Saturday. It's going to be from 10 to 4, and you're going to, you know, bring a sack lunch kind of thing, and I'll have drinks and a bit of a snack. What I will be doing is presenting numerous kinds of meditation. So it's for those who think they can't meditate, those who say, oh, I tried, it's not for me, those who've never done it would like to learn about it, and those who've done it for years that want to take it deeper. They're getting bored with it, or it's not working for them, or they find themselves resisting it all the time.
Yeah, one of my favorite books on meditation was written by a guy who was also influenced by Kashmir Shaivism. I forget his name now, but the name of the book is easy to remember. It's called Meditation Made Easy.
I don't know which one that is, but it sounds right.
Yeah. And one of the things that he emphasized, basically it's a wonderful book because it goes through trying to clear up all the misconceptions we have about meditation. Meditation is a big boogie word in which there's all these sort of right ways to do it, you know, and well, you know, if your back ain't as straight as a yardstick, or you know, if you're not breathing from the depths of your belly, all of which are good advice in themselves to a degree, but they don't necessarily embrace what meditations can be. And also the other people, the classic one is, you're going to meditate, for 5 minutes twice a day, you know, in the morning. I don't have time to meditate for 5 minutes. I don't have time. I'm a busy, you know, creative, engaged person with the world, and it's meditating for five. No way. You know, So one of the things that he's done, and which is, by the way, a very powerful thing, are these, 20-second meditation breaks. You know?
Jeff Brantley put out a book recently. Well, I mean, it was published by a publisher called 1 Minute Meditations. He's a local psychiatrist and fabulous meditation teacher. And he put out, that may be co-authored. I'm sorry if I'm leaving out the other author. But it's Dr. Jeffrey Brantley. And it's 1 Minute Meditations.
And the thing is that these meditations, many of which are have their roots in the great esoteric traditions of India and Buddhist.
Actually,
and
of
things.
Many places in the world.
Yeah, many places in the world. The is that you can do these very. In fact, when I try to get people to meditate, I try to get them to. Embrace one or two of the, you know, you give them a whole variety of techniques, of different ways to approach it.
Exactly.
And then you say, okay, I want you to choose the one that you're, that seems most natural to you. Maybe it's the one you already do without knowing it. And then do it for, and then make a vow that you're going to do it 5 times deliberately during, you know, a day or a morning. You know, you're going to stop and you're going to take that 10 seconds or the 20 seconds or the minute or whatever you want to say it is, and you're going to stop and do this practice, you know, 5 times, you know. And because then the real discipline is not doing it so much, is remembering to do it, but you're doing it in a way that, you know, everybody's got 3 minutes.
And if that's not comfortable to you, because part of being eclectic about teaching anything is giving many different ways to do it. That's an excellent way.
Yeah.
And if that's not comfortable to you, then another way to do it is to decide, okay, I'm going to give it 5 minutes before I go to work, or 5 minutes right when I come home, or 5 minutes before I go to bed. See how that feels. Do that for a week or 2 weeks. See whether your overall sleep or your overall day is slightly more peaceful or calm, whether that 5 minutes felt like it was worth it. And maybe you want to then expand to 10, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't want to go by time. And maybe it will grow on you as it has on me and on my husband, who started with one kind of meditation, transcendental meditation, a billion years ago. Oh, my goodness, 35 years ago. And when I have mornings, I don't get to spend some quiet time. And then it might be my thoughts were busy the whole time. But when I have mornings that I don't get to, I notice a difference in my day. But I'll tell you a funny story. We went to Association for Research and Enlightenment, ARE, just from the Edgar Cayce things, years ago, and they had this master from India. His name was Fakir Dayal, never been in the States before. He was like 90-something, literally. Mm-hmm. He's sitting cross-legged on a pillow, straight-backed, and talking in his language, and then it's being translated, and then there's a Q&A. So during the questions and answers, somebody stands up and says, does your mind ever wander in meditation? I mean, you do it 5 hours a day, and you've done it since you were 6 years old. Does your mind wander? Well, he almost fell off his pillow laughing. And when he finally got his breath, he said, my mind wander? Mind is like monkey, jumps from tree to tree to tree. Give it banana, maybe it sits still to finish it. And maybe it just pussed part of the banana and throws it down. Of course mind wanders. Minds are made to wander. It was such a relief.
It's such a relief to know that the great meditation masters of the world still have monkey minds long and deeply into their practice. On the same thread is that one of the other great supports for meditation is learning to do it with other people. And
very true.
You know, and one of the movements that's very in the Christian movement these days is centering prayer, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Right, definitely. In fact, some of the people in some of my ongoing groups are also in a centering prayer group.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of centering prayer. I have been ever since I learned about it back in the early 80s. And the mainly because it already fit into my preconceptions of what meditation was, and I figured, well, you know, they're saying what I already know. I says it must be okay, you know. So I'm just a close-minded Capricorn. We'll get right down to it. But one of the things with centering prayer is that And I remember, actually, I went to a centering prayer group, and actually nobody actually discussed the centering prayer. They've been doing it for a number of years, but nobody discussed their practice, their awareness of it. So I kind of encouraged them to talk about it more. And some of the amazing accounts that came up was like, for instance, you know, I sat down for my 20 minutes because I'm really good about this. They've ritualized this 20 minutes in the morning and the evening. I sat down for my 20, and for the whole time, my mind was wandering. It was a fight. I never settled down. I never said. I almost never remembered return to my word that caused me, you know, that I say to as a way of telling my mind to settle down. You know, it's not a mantra they do, but it's just like a word that you use.
Like
to
you would take
yourself
from Psalms, be still and know that I am God. And maybe they would just take still.
Yeah, be still.
Or be still or yeah. be.
Or the one that my centering word is love. And, you know, when I say love, it brings this possibility up to me. I mean, these are not, it's not a mantra, but it is a way of invoking the listening to the divine, the listening for the great unknown. And you don't actually expect a response per se. You know, it's sort of like say, you know, oh, Lord, I'm listening to you. And he says, it's about time. you might hear that, but for the most part, you're not going to hear this. You're going to hear and you're going to see that you're going to open up to the stillness. So I have these people, you know, who talk about, everybody has days where they just can't settle, but they stay with the practice because that's part of the discipline, the exteriority of the practice. Well, I may never feel that I said. One of the things they discovered is that even the days that they had the worst practices of the experience of centering prayer, when they were going through their day, they would find that, for instance, in one case, it was a child was coming up and a teenager haranguing them about this, that, and the other thing. And they found themselves being very relaxed and non-reactive to the situation.
That's the honest truth is, it's not whether your mind wanders. There's something that's gained from having chosen to take the time. That's actually, to me, one of the mysteries, one of the thousands, billions of mysteries, which is that even if my mind wandered, as it did this morning, the entire time, it's not about that. Because somehow there is a greater peace that takes place because of having done the time, the practice, even though the practice probably in the non-mind wandering part was a second or two, it's still the whole time you did it was the practice.
Yeah, and that's the amazing part. So even though... And it's good to know that, you know, even the great meditation masters realize that as far as the mind goes, it wanders, it moves around. This doesn't mean you're not meditating.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. Honest.
Yeah. I mean, all the things that you think are not meditating are part of the process of meditating. And the basic difference is to intend. And one of the wonderful things about centering prayer, for instance, is that it just opens you up to you open yourself to the expectation of intending towards the divine, but you're not painting a picture of what that's going to be. A lot of newbie meditators, for instance, say, you know, I meditated today and I felt so good. I had washed. You know, graces came through me, and I felt exhilarated, and it was so wonderful. Well, you know, that was true for me, too, when I first started meditating, but it lasted about a month, and then I got bored, you know, and the graces went away, and I'm thinking, you know, God, where are you? And God sort of said to me, you know, in that still small voice, he says, well, actually, I want you to know me as I am, and not as you wish me to be. You know, I think, well, okay, as you go deeper and deeper into it, what happens is that the divine graces sort of come through in a way you could say is more ordinary. I mean, it becomes more and more ordinary.
And it's the same as when you do want advice, when you want that inner voice to help you with something, you open to receiving it, you ask for it, then you release it, And it may not come at all during meditation. You may be riding your bike later down. This happened to me, you know, I was riding the bike much later in the day on my way to work. And all of a sudden, the answer to what had been there earlier was there. So we receive all the time. It's a way of opening the door and saying, I'm willing to receive, and putting a boundary on it that says, I'm willing to receive that which comes through love. I'm willing to receive that which is for my highest good and the highest good of all concerned. That's part of why I always say a prayer when I do any kind of mentorship with other people, teach a class, etc. It sets the boundary and it asks for all that adds to what I can receive that serves the truth to come through and help out.
Yeah. And in some ways, you know, I've often wondered when I used to, you know, in my varied career, I was a preacher. you know, preaching is a difficult thing. And of course, what I thought preaching was sort of like kind of what we've been doing in this radio show to a degree right now is you kind of try to get people to, you know, cotton up to, you know, recognize that they've got a capacity to recognize, you know, their own authenticity. I'm a Unitarian, so we don't use those big words like God and spirit. You know, you're going to know your own true authenticity is going to, you know, perk through you, and you're going to see, you know, and you're going to be at home with it, and you'll find it peaceful and forgiving and opening, and, you know, no sin, no judgment.
There's a oneness in all of this, so that whatever your belief systems are or aren't, you have a chance to simply open moment to moment to life, to the love, to sing from your heart instead of your head. There's a great song, "You Don't Always Have to Hold Your Head Higher Than Your Heart."
Yeah.
By Jack Johnson.
Right. I remember, you know, so in the process of preaching every now and then I'd end up, you know, getting the congregation angry at me for some of the things I said. Yeah. And, you know, but I always said, well, you know, I don't understand this. I said, I always pray beforehand that whatever I say is for the best of everybody, you know, and it doesn't cause any stuff. And yet, no matter what happens, I'm still getting some people riled, angry with what's going on.
But you don't know, but what that was, the growing edge had to be tickled. I've given a number of sermons over the years, often substitute for ministers when they wake up sick with a laryngitis or get a sore throat or whatever, and or are going on leave. And what I love about it is feeling the group, feeling what they need. And yes, I have an outline, but just feeling that rapport and letting it create what's coming through. It's a joy to me to be with people in an openness that allows us all to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for all of us an opportunity, not just me. Anytime, anywhere, any moment. I hadn't met Paul till this morning. This is an opportunity, and thank you for all of you that are listening, because joining with you and being able to feel your presence is marvelous. Thank you.
And by the way, you are listening to Touchstones on WCOM LP. We're a community radio station, and we exist by your leave and your donations. So when you find it in your heart and are being pestered by the bigger public station on the hill for money, remember that we are down here too, and we really need some of that cash to keep us afloat, because we are truly a community radio station. We are 100%, folks, volunteer-driven. So we need your support. And this has been Touchstones. I got one question. It's probably the one I should have started the show with. I got one question, as you were saying. Now, and part of your practice is channeling, you know, messages or getting a sense.
Actually,
of,
I mean, I've done this. Well, yes, yeah. But I don't call it that at all.
Okay. Well, what,
because
well,
that
why don't you
became,
tell me what you
okay.
called. Yeah.
The word channeling has gotten so, I don't know, it's been used in so many different ways. Yeah. I actually do not like the word because we all co-create. What we receive from our highest self. We receive from, to me, it's like a funnel. All that is truth, all that is divine. If we set the boundary and say that's what we're going to receive via prayer or whatever way you do that, such as I'll only receive that which is for the highest good of myself and all concerned, I say within the Christ light, because I believe that means all that serves truth. I don't believe that means a narrow version of someone's ideas. Anyway, what I do is to receive to the best of my ability from the highest that is for whomever I am, for whomever I'm working with, including their highest self and all that works with them. And I do the same when I teach for the group that's there. And I also feel that spiritual community is deeply important. And so I do my best to create spiritual community, whether I am talking to you and you're invisible to me by radio or in the living room. And we all receive, which is another reason the word channel became an exclusive, this person can do it and that can't. I don't believe that.
Yeah, I
believe we all receive. But I did do what was called channeling for 13 years every week in Chapel Hill. 30 to 50 people were there every week by the grace of the Busenbergs, and it was in their basement for, which they fully furnished for the being able to do it for probably 11 of those 13 years. And I'm very grateful for that because it opened a lot of people to a lot of things. And yes, it was coming through. A lot of times it was to questions that were asked at the time and whatever came through. But isn't that what we all do? When a friend is asking you a question, needs something, and has asked for it, not because we invade their boundaries, then isn't it true that we all receive and sometimes are even surprised what just came through our mouth at that moment and how well it worked? So I totally believe that each and every one of us, every one of you listening, is every bit as much an inspired being. We have choices how we use it and what we do. This happens to be what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I really hope that you've had an opportunity to enjoy this show, either live now on WCOM on Chapel Hill in Carrboro, 103.5 in the FM range. And I've been your host, Paul Nosh, and this has been Touchstones. And later this, later beginning probably next month, because of the summertime, and I've decided that it didn't make sense to be dragging a lot of people into a relatively stuffy studio, I'm going to be trying a new format for the show, in which I will be selecting one at a time some of the great mystics, and we'll be reading selections from their words and their writings. We'll be doing Meister Eckhart, Mujahideen Ibn Arabi, from all the world traditions. And we'll be just reading small selections of their writings. And if I feel necessary, I will add a little conversational obfuscation of what they mean. But the idea is what I would like to do then way is perhaps introduce people to the profoundly deep and broad range of spirituality that is available to us in very healthy, happy, and relatively accessible translations through libraries and bookstores.
And Paul has available, as does this station, archive of previous programs.
Yes, and if you're listening to this, and if you've got this as a download, you were on the archive page, which is where we keep the previous archives. Look at some of those shows, and you can probably tell from the way that I've set them up who they what they were about.
And you can reach me, Donna Spring Gulick, at www.donna D-O-N-N-A, Spring, S-P-R-I-N-G, Gulick, G-U-L-I-C-K, .com.
Yes, and that website will be in the archive, too, so you'll be able to click right through to it. So take care, folks, and we'll be here next week with another guest. And it's been a real pleasure, Donna, for us having this conversation today.
It's been a pleasure to be with all you listeners. Many, many blessings. Thank you, Paul.
Bye.